Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sometimes I feel like doing a radio show is gangster capitalism. I mean, how easy does it get? You get in here, turn a mic on, and broadcast to the world. CCO, you go all, I don't know, Canada, Europe. I don't even know how far we reach. It seems like it should be harder than that. But tonight it was. Because tonight, I do this when I do the 6 o'clock news and I come over here. And I've got this system in place. And this system has become flawless and foolproof. I have a bike ready for me to go. A standard, I don't know if it's a Schwinn or what it is. I bought it at Target for $100 because I'm cheap. And I ride my bike from CCO TV to CCO Radio. And I can do it in 80 seconds, even though it's 6 blocks away. Because I don't have to wait at all the stoplights. And I just kind of got a clear path that I got figured out. So it's this, people laugh at me because I got this suit on and makeup on. I'm hauling butt over here to get over here. And I get here with plenty of time to spare because I can do it in 80 seconds. We get down to the 6 o'clock news at about 6:28. I'm here by 6:31, usually the latest. And one thing I hadn't thought about in my flawless, foolproof mode of transportation is that there's a chance one night that it could rain and be windy and suck outside. And so I arrive here tonight fully clothed and fully drenched. Yeah, it's the little details that you forget about sometimes. And I mean, the wind was just blowing in my face and you're driving down the rain. And you guys know how this is. Your makeup starts running. And people are laughing at you. Some guy rolls down his window. That'll serve you, Maxie. Another guy rolls down his window and says, see, you weathermen don't know what you're talking about because they think I'm Chris Schaefer all the time. So they thought it was ironic that a weatherman didn't know and he was stuck in the rain like this. And people like to laugh at other people's expense. We like that. We like to see people fail. What is it about that? You know, you're talking about money and gangster money. And the what I wonder is, okay, you're talking about Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin or Loughlin, however you say it, that they did this for their kids. I mean, these are the high-profile people. There's a lot of people that have a lot of money that are not high-profile. They're not celebrities. How many people have done this whose names might mean nothing to us, but the point is, how epidemic is it? How rampant is this? And by the way, if you think that this is something new, paying for favors, trying to get a break, trying to do this, trying to help kids, I mean, that's all that... That's society. Parents calling for kids. They call me. They want their, because it was son or daughter getting broadcasting. I said, well, why aren't they calling me? Why are you calling me? Why aren't they calling? If they want the job, why aren't they calling me? Because if they're not calling me, then that tells me maybe they haven't got the gumption to what it takes to be a reporter in this town. But they call this gangster capitalism, and obviously the people that benefit from it, the guys take. I mean, how many people do you got to have in cahoots with you? But I mean, this has been going on forever. And I don't know, and I think this would be a really interesting study for you parents out there. It would be hard to orchestrate. But a lot of you parents now have kids that are about to go to college, are considering college, are going to college. And here's what I've always wondered. If you send out your application to 5 schools and your son or daughter is a, I don't know, let's just say they're a B student, and they find out that you need no financial aid, meaning your family's well off enough that you're not going to get no grants, nothing comes out of it. So in other words, you're going to help pay for other students to go to school there is what that means. If you don't qualify for financial aid and you pay the full boat, then in essence, you help finance other people's school. That's the way it works. But I wonder how many of those people get accepted because they say, well, look, he or she doesn't need any financial aid. mom or dad can write the check here, and so therefore this is a real clear, clean and easy one. We get the 50 grand for sure in our coffer. We don't have to worry about grants or competing against other schools, and because they're willing to pay the 50. That's not the problem. They're willing to pay the full boat. And I wonder how many times they sit there and they say, oh, let's admit that person. And then compare that to what the qualifications are of other kids that need more aid. And do they have a different threshold, a different standard that they have to hit? In other words, this isn't a B-plus student. But for them to qualify, it looks like they have huge needs. Are they good enough or not? Well, I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that. I just wonder, you know, when you talk about what's happening here with this gangster capitalism, whatever you want to call it, I wonder how many other facets there are to this thing. Because I can remember hearing stories of, how did that guy get into school? Well, you know, his dad's got a lot of money. Well, what does that mean? I don't know. Does that mean dad paid somebody to get him in, or does that mean dad he didn't qualify for any? I don't know. But you wonder about that. You wonder if there's a total number that a college has to hit of revenue generated from a freshman class, and therefore they work it, they jockey it, they do this, they do that, so that they can hit that number because they need so much in the treasure chest to move forward. You know, and these presidents ain't cheap. That's a nice salary they take down. Now, the president at St. John's University is retiring after this year, and he said he gets like $410,000 a year. And I don't know if that's plus plus. I don't know if there's more stuff on top of that. I don't know what a 401k would look like in a private college. So I don't know if there's extra things in there, X amount of years. But these presidents aren't cheap. MIAC has a lot of them making in that $600,000-$700,000. So much for the vow of poverty, huh? At a Catholic institution. So somebody's got to pay that freight. And I've often wondered if that's the case. Now here's another. You talk about money. I was thinking about this because at the Timberwolves today, I'm standing by Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm talking to these two guys. One's got a $150 million contract. One's got, $200 and some million dollar contract, whatever it is. And they're like 23 years old, 24 years old, you know? And you forget this because you see them all the time and you converse with them and you talk about basketball and you forget the grandeur and the scope of how much money they have. And I was reading this article, and this really has nothing to do with an athlete, but it's an interesting concept. And the concept is this. This lady talked about how she grew up in a house where they had enough money, but it was tightly budgeted, and you were accountable, and you didn't really learn about money. You were just told if you spent too much, et cetera. Her dad was very diligent about that. Don't spend your money on dumb stuff. This all sounds good, right? But her takeaway was, when she went away to college, was number one, she didn't understand money because nobody ever taught her money. They just told her when she was spending too much and when she did something stupid. Number two, there's a high value on money in their household. Money solves problems. That was her takeaway from where she grew up. And so you need to have plenty of money to solve plenty of problems. So it's a really interesting article. I wish I could find it. So she ends up in college meeting this guy that comes from a wealthy family. And they fall in love, whatever. And they get married right after college. And he does well at his job. He's a hard-charging guy, right? And he makes a lot of money. And she still has no concept of how money works. And every time she broaches the topic with him, he says, it's too complicated. Don't worry. Just don't do stupid stuff. And every time she comes home with a credit card bill, it comes in, he says, what were you thinking? And so she is incredibly insecure about her understanding of money. But they have a ton of money. And she talks about this, two homes and boats and this and that and access to and do whatever we want, new clothes, whatever's trending, we buy, etc. I mean, it sounds like a great lifestyle. They want for nothing. They have everything. But she doesn't understand money, and she realizes that she has reverted back to where she was as a child, that the dad in the house runs the money part, and she knows nothing about it, which makes her feel incredibly insecure, which leads to these arguments. And the interesting part of it is, as she moves on, she says, I began to envy my friends who struggled financially because I saw them as a couple that would sit in bed at night and pray about their dire circumstances, but they'd do it together. And through that, they would form a connection, a bond, because they were struggling through life together. And she began to become envious of the people that had far less of her than her, because she believed that the ultimate marriage partnership was when you did it, when you were in it together, when you fought the same battles, when you understood the same things, and in principle you move in the same direction together, rather than having a bunch of money, which created a bunch of arguments. Because one understood it, one didn't. And eventually, she said, we got divorced after 20 years. 20 years of marriage. And she said, it even afforded me, when I was married, it even afforded me a career that I could choose whatever I wanted. So I became a writer, even though it wasn't lucrative, because we had enough money to back it up. And she couldn't gain satisfaction from that either, because she didn't know if there was worth in it or not. And I thought, and this is an interesting question, you can call us or text us at 651-989-9226. Would you give up the security the intimacy and the partnership and the building together, the grind that goes with marriage and doing it together, would you give that up if you'd never have to worry about money, but you're disconnected from your spouse because you're kind of living in two different worlds? Would that security be enough that you would endure that kind of a marriage, because to have financial freedom or to not worry about money is a greater driving force than being connected with someone and going through life and kind of doing life together? That's a tough question. Susan, what do you think? I'm reading this and I'm going, wow, you know, she's got it wasn't like she had a terrible marriage. It was just, you know, they didn't connect and they didn't go through life together, you know?
I think finances is a major part of a couple's relationship on if it's going to make it or break it. Because if you're both on different planes, like say one's a spender, one's a saver. But if you don't,
you got problems.
And if you don't agree that one's a saver, one's a spender, so that the saver once in a while has to let the spender spend,
okay,
but the spender has to let the saver save. You have problems.
Can we pick it up on the other side? Because I didn't realize we're up against it. Welcome back. Ryan Saunders in the 7 o'clock hour. John Anderson, Gopher baseball coach, and much more. Joan in Minneapolis has been waiting patiently to talk about finances and marriage. Give it to us quick, Joan. We're up against the clock.
Yep. I can't imagine not being able to do the budget and giving up the relationship that we have with that. So, no, you can keep your millions. I'll keep my relationship and know my budget.
So that's an easy decision for you.
Yes, very easy. And I do handle our full budget. So I'll keep my – and we live on a pension, so, and Social Security. So we are budgeted.
Okay. Joan, keep up the good work. Thank you for your call. I don't have any problem with what my wife spends. Unless she spends it on something really stupid, then it really pisses me off. You know, I understand we need toilet paper and Kleenex and things like that. That's all good stuff. But some of the stuff, my gosh, what in the world? In that vague Target, I mean, how could you spend $115 at Target with nothing that backs it up that anything that I need? I'm sorry. Ryan Saunders is up next on Sports with Max.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.